Welcome to another edition of Interview an Expert. My name is Ray Dugray, and I'm here today with my business and life partner, Maria Ngo, along with our special guest expert, Sharon Abbott. Maria and I are a husband and wife team with a shared vision and mission. That is, to live a highly rewarding life by empowering entrepreneurs and small business owners in building their own mini conglomerates with no employees, low overhead, minimal risk, and mega profits. We have focused our entrepreneurial doctoral studies and our entire life on this purpose and are dedicated to sharing our and our associates' know-how in the process. Together, we are known as the Entrepreneur Doctors. You may learn more about us at www.entrepreneurdoctors.com. I'm now going to turn the interview over to Maria to introduce Sharon Abbott of Elite Leads Business Development.
Thank you so much, Ray. Sharon Abbott is the founder of Elite Leads, which is a business development organization dedicated to helping people find success in their own passionate work. Since 1991, Sharon has helped more than 2,000 people become successful entrepreneurs, with more than 90% of them still in business today, which is absolutely amazing success rate considering that 90% of companies fail by their second anniversary. She attributes her clients' success to the educational environment and relationship building techniques that she teaches. She has appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show, where she was featured for her innovative concepts on positive communication techniques, and has been featured as a keynote speaker in national conferences. Sharon is also the author of Mixing It Up, her book that is dedicated to leading entrepreneurs to success. Also, JOBS, which is Just Over Broke Syndrome, for anyone who has ever thought about starting their own business. And finally, she's authored Making a List and Checking It Twice, an inspirational guide to help singles choose a great mate. She's recognized nationally as an entrepreneurial advocate and teaches highly creative courses for those branching out on their own, like Speak Easy, Street Smart Sales, and You're Right to Write. In today's interview, Sharon will provide some of the common challenges that entrepreneurs encounter and a variety of solutions to overcome those challenges. So please help me welcome the talented and successful entrepreneur, Ms. Sharon Abbott. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you, Marie and Ray.
Well, the reason why I called you talented, Sharon, is because I found out that not only are you a successful entrepreneur, but you also, for fun, are an opera singer. You design your own clothing and jewelry, and I just find that absolutely amazing.
Kind of a Jill of all trades.
I would call you a master because I've seen some of your work, and it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I want to go ahead and get started. As I was reading your introduction, what really resonated with me was that 90% of companies fail by their second anniversary. That is an astonishing statistic. So I guess what I need to ask you is, why do so few businesses actually succeed?
Well, I think that a lot of times what happens is that people get into business because they're tired of working for someone else or they think they can do a better job of it. And what the IRS did, which I find really interesting, the only study that they ever did that I found had noteworthy information. they found that 80% of businesses that fail not because they have a lack of money and not because they don't know what they're doing. It's because they don't change when the environment changes. They don't look up long enough to actually see what's going on around them with their competition. So an example, in Walnut Creek, Starbucks had a contract for non-compete with Pete's. They were originally partners about 25 years ago. And 20 years and 1 week, I swear, that Starbucks was in the Bay Area with a vengeance. And so they came into Walnut Creek and they put in two different Starbucks. Within 6 months, four of the local coffee houses went out of business. Now, these are people who had been there for 6 to 10 years. Now, if they had just looked up long enough to think, what can I do to retain my clients? What is Starbucks doing that I'm not doing to attract people? They might have been able to succeed.
Sharon, I'm going to ask you a question here that I get asked constantly by entrepreneurs. And as you know, Maria and I, we travel the circuit, and we come across a lot of entrepreneurs, and some very successful, and some just trying to make a go of it. But consistently, what I hear, the biggest challenge is, how do I run a business and balance my life with everything else, and especially their families? And the thing I notice about people is people spend the majority of their time in business, trying to make a go of it, and a very little time in spending with their family. And I tell you, if you ask these people at the end of their lives on their deathbed, you know, what would you like to do if you can turn it all around again, I don't think many of them are saying, I think I would spend more time in the office or more time at the computer. Or they're probably going to say, I would like to spend more time with the families. So my question to you is, when everybody is so darn busy trying to create a business and trying to balance their families, how do they go about making this happen to ensure success in their business?
You know, as with you, I find this comes up so often, and I see that most people spend a lot of time being busy, but they're not productive. So what's really a shame is they don't understand the business acumen, and being in business means you have an obligation to everyone around you to run the business as though it's something that has a driving force. It really has a life of its own. So to have a successful business, the minimum is 35% of the time has to be spent in marketing the business. Now that's 12 hours a week minimum. So it's going to networking groups, getting in front of people who will refer them business, speaking, writing, somehow 12 hours out of their week without fail until they have enough clients has to be spent in marketing capacity, and also 7% of their entire income. Now, once they have enough business, if they look at 25% of their time and 5% of their income directed to marketing, that helps them stabilize. But you've probably seen this, where people get really busy and they stop marketing. And then 3 to 6 months later, they have no clients. So they have to start all over. So they have this roller coaster. So then they end up working 12-15-hour days. Next thing you know, that their kids have been in a baseball season, but they haven't taken a day out to go watch them play baseball. And what is it the kids remember when they're growing up? That the dad wasn't there, mom wasn't there because they're too busy running a business?
True.
Or that the quality time that they had with their family? And the reason they're in business in the first place is to take care of the family. That doesn't mean just financially.
Absolutely. Like they say, when you go into business, you only have to work half days. You just have to decide, was it the first 12 hours or the second 12 hours?
Exactly.
And it's probably closer to 14 from what I hear.
Yeah, if I put in a 14-hour day, I feel like I'm doing well.
Right.
But I never feel like it's work. You know, and the thing is, though, I have to tell you that I don't have a husband and kids to take care of. So I have no one telling me, hey, it's time to walk away from the computer.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly why Maria and I have chosen to do everything together as a husband and wife team, because we understand that that is a big challenge in being able to spend time with your family. And I tell you, it would be different if I was on the road flying from city to city and Maria was doing her own thing. And that's one of the big challenges with people, is they're doing their own thing. And, man, if you could just bring it together and make it work and have people connecting with the family, that's really what they want. That's what the life is about. And so,
well, that's what they start out thinking, and then they forget it.
Right, exactly.
Well, I know that many of our callers, or our listeners, rather, are either thinking about starting business or currently in business. So what have you found, Sharon, the biggest challenge that people face in creating their ideal business?
You know, it's really interesting. I've watched probably more than 10,000 people in the Bay Area who have started their business. And they think that they're going to create this business because it's economically going to take care of them and their family. But it's not the right business. They don't have the passion that's behind it. So I've seen people that sit around at our leads meetings here in the Bay Area with the most monotonous voice you could imagine and think that they're going to convince somebody to work with them. So if they can't find the enthusiasm about their business, why should anyone else be enthused enough to work with them? I think the major challenge that people face is if you're doing the same thing every day, how do you find that enthusiasm so that somebody else is going to be conscious enough to say, gosh, they sound like they're a fun person to work with. I want to work with them.
So would you suggest if someone is currently in a business that they're not very enthusiastic about, would you suggest for them to trade industries?
I usually have found, like when I started Elite Leads 14 years ago, it's not even the same business that I have today. I was very lucky that I had people around me. I was surrounded by people who were very intelligent and very creative, and they would say, well, you know what, you might be happier if you tried this. So I'd tweak this and change that, add this, take that out. You know, I was in one area where I had to drive about an hour to get there to run meetings once a month, and the attendance was like 25% of what it was anywhere else. And one day, this mentor said to me, why are you doing that to yourself? You don't have to go out there. Start a group here locally where you have a 50% ratio in attendance. Mm. So I think some people are just afraid of change. And if you find, like in the last, I would say, 6 years, the thing that I get so stoked about is speaking publicly. So when I'm running my meetings, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that last speaking engagement, when I said this and somebody had a reaction, they came up to me and they said they were so excited about this information because it is what they've been looking for. That passion carries over into everything I do every day.
And we certainly sense your passion, Sharon. Every time we've met you, you're a great person to be around because you just radiate positive energy.
Thank you. I have to constantly remind myself to tone it down a little bit, you know, pull back a couple of notches because I could be pretty overwhelming.
I want to mention something. I want to follow up on something that you had mentioned, and that most people are afraid of change. Now, I have spent 20 years in the workforce as a professional firefighter and paramedic, and it came to a point in my life where I decided that I'm just going to take the plunge and I'm going to throw myself out into that scary world to become an entrepreneur. So I know what worked for me, but I think my circumstance was different. And Marie and I were able to create a tremendous amount of success through doing this. But I wouldn't suggest the average person just say, you know what, quit your job, leave your security on the table, and do this. I believe there's strategy involved. And what's commonly voiced to us when people are thinking about going into business, but they have that secure job, is they say they're afraid of the change. They're absolutely terrified of losing what they often call the comfort zone. Well, my response to that is, what is so darn comfortable about the comfort zone? Because it's often a position of lack. You don't have enough money, you don't have enough time, and so on, which is often what's attracting you to going into business in the first place. So can you talk about that? Can you share with our listeners, what are some of the things that you could do when you're working full-time and you're in that comfort zone, but you really want to get out? What are some of the strategies that you can do to start making those changes?
I work privately with a number of people that are employees. And, you know, in the corporate arena, change is the one big challenge that corporations face.
Yep.
You know, you change software, you change computers, you change anything, and everybody freaks out and stops being productive. So if you're thinking personally, okay, I'm going to change and I'm going to go do something I've never done on my own before, and I'm still going to have to be responsible financially, that's scary. And I acknowledge that. But there's a learning curve. When I started Elite Leads, I actually was doing it for 2 years before I would even admit it was a business. I didn't have business cards. I never gave anybody a phone number to contact me to be able to come to a meeting. I had a travel agency, and I would say, call me at the office at my travel agency. But then one day I managed to sell the travel agency, and I thought, well, this is kind of fun, so maybe I can turn it into a business. In the first 6 months, I made all these little sticky notes. It was really funny because I had all these yellow sticky notes, about 12 of them, around the monitor on my computer. And every time I'd go to pick up the phone, I'd read each and every one of those 12 little sticky notes. Why did the last person come to my meeting? What was the big issue for them when they decided they wanted to join the group? What's the biggest challenge that people face when they're coming out? So I would have all these ideas, and I'd read through every one of them, and I'd pick up the phone, and I'd call somebody with all this information just fresh in my mind. And then I started asking people, what's the one thing you need in your business right now? And when I got out of my own way, thinking that I had to sell something to someone, that I can instead find out what they needed, what they perceived was their biggest need, then my business began to flourish. And the whole idea is, you know, you can imagine if you're an employee and you're thinking, okay, I want to start a business and I know exactly what I want to do. If you have an hour for lunch and you spend a half an hour every day making one step that you're getting closer to starting your business, that's 2.5 hours a week. That's 10 hours a month. And you create a timeline, so you back it out. I want to start my business in 6 months. I have to have a business plan. I have to be able to have a bank account. I have to have the phone number. There's all the little techniques, the steps that you have to go through. My mentor was, have you ever seen those Pepsi bottles, Coke bottles that were long and twisted necks?
Yes.
That was his. He actually did those. And the Coke cans that were cigarette lighters, those were his. He'd get up in the morning and he'd say, you know what? My wife, Susie, was really giving me a hard time last night because she wanted to sleep and I wanted the TV on. 2 days later, he had a wireless headset for the television. This guy was brilliant. So he would come up with this idea, and half the time, by the end of the first day, he had his first client. He didn't write a business plan. He didn't go out and get a bank loan. He didn't spend all his time and energy planning it and thinking it and talking it over. He just went out and made it happen. And that's where I got my inspiration. I think a lot of people get bogged down by the detail. And if you start talking to people who have an interest in what you're doing and your passion comes through, you're going to find nationally they say that if you talk to 20 people, one of those 20 people is going to be a client. How many people do you need to support yourself financially? And the entrepreneur on a national level will replace their income from the job in half the time that they spent on the job.
Wow.
That's excellent.
Now, I caught some key points in here. That was great advice because I heard something that I believe I agree with you is the key here, and that was the baby steps. Is just,
right.
You don't need to take the plunge. It's just start doing some of the things that you need to do while you have that secure paycheck and transition your way into it. And the other key point I heard is having a passion for it. You obviously
yeah, without the passion. Without the passion, I don't think it is ever going to be easy.
Sure. I agree with you because when the world starts to beat up on you, you're going to stop. You're going to quit. And
I really want to address this whole thing about the secure job and the paycheck. I am so adamant about my opinion of unemployed people hanging out with unemployed people. I go out and talk to about 10,000 people a year that have lost their jobs because I want to kick them into action to get them to start thinking about one man that I met had been laid off 10 times in 10 years.
Good grief.
54 years old, an engineer who 2 years before his wife divorced him because she just couldn't take it again. He spent all of his children's education money. He lost the house, and he was living in a one-bedroom apartment. And he said, I just need a job. I have to have the paycheck. And I said, you know, you have to explain this to me. because in the last 6 years, we have seen in California 3 million people displaced from that job. No income and nothing to get them by. And there's no guarantee in corporate America that there's ever going to be security in the corporate world again. When we look at nationally, statistically, 99% of all businesses that filed a business tax form for the IRS, 99% were entrepreneurs, fewer than 50 employees. And in 2004, for the first time in the history of this country, 87% of our economy was driven by those entrepreneurial businesses. So the trend is you better start looking at what you can do to cover your income requirements with or without a corporate job.
That's a great point. Sharon, I just want to go back a bit when you and Ray were talking about passion. Now, we have a friend, and I know that you're familiar with him, Greg Reed, who often quotes, you know, turn your passion into profits. And, you know, I'm very passionate, let's say, about volleyball. But I'm also 5'3", and let's say I'm not in my 20s. And even though that's a passion, I mean, it's hard to turn that into something. So can you give specific methods that will help people discover their passion in work?
So how many young women would like to improve their ability to play volleyball?
Oh, I'm sure lots.
If you were giving lessons, how many would it take for you to make an income that you could be comfortable with?
I see.
If you did volleyball camps, if you arranged tournaments, how long would it take you before you could turn that into a decent income? That one was easy. I think about, and sometimes I kind of laugh because people will say, you know, how did you do that? And I'll laugh. They're like, I have no responsibility for how my mind thinks. I am just so blessed to have been around so many entrepreneurs over the last 15 years that opened the floodgate. They actually made it possible for me to think creatively. And think about having the passion and hanging around employees who are willing to go to work every Monday and go griping home every Friday and do the same thing week after week, year after year. What does that do to your creativity?
Well, I think that's the definition of insanity, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, Greg Scott Reed, I've never seen anyone with more enthusiasm than that guy.
No, I agree.
Sharon, I'm going to talk about mentors because I know you had mentioned it earlier that there was someone that had inspired you. And I know that everyone in business as an entrepreneur has mentors that they're just trying to follow in their footsteps every step of the way, because I think that's one of the keys is just identify the people who've already done it and then do exactly what they've done. And in order to do that, if you're the, again, going back to the employee that's looking to enter the world of small business, to help start, first of all, finding a mentor, and even greater than that, finding an entire support system, what advice would you give this person who has just become an entrepreneur and would now like to create not only a mentorship but an entire support system so that they would have they would know who their accountants are, who their bookkeepers are, and so on?
I think most people have heard the story of Wayne Dyer when he was sleeping on a haystack and working in a fitness center, and one day he looked out as he was going to work, and he saw this limo pull into town, and this man got out of the back of the limo and went into the fitness center where he was working. And he asked him if he could buy him a cup of coffee. And they bantered back and forth and finally convinced him that they should have coffee together. And I guess with Wayne's enthusiasm and his presence, the man agreed to meet with him on a monthly basis and have coffee. And what happened to Wayne was thinking that his life was all it was going to be, not having enough money to even rent an apartment, starting from, you know, basically not having any background, no family support, anything. And look at where he is today, a multi-million-dollar corporation that he's inspired millions and millions of people throughout the country and the world. So the mentor, I think, has a huge impact on someone. And people look around and they say, well, how do I find a mentor? I want you for a mentor. Well, honestly, there's only so many hours in the day, and I can only mentor so many people. So I look and I say, what is the one person in your field of interest that you think is successful? Buy them lunch. Ask them out for coffee. It is really funny because I was listening to this tape series, and this man was talking about every time a speaker came into town in Florida, he would offer to pick him up at the airport. And it didn't matter if they had to drive 3 hours or 6 hours. He would drive them wherever he was going on the speaking engagement. And every time he did this, he would pick his brain. How did you do that? How did you find your success? Where did you go? Who did you talk to? How'd you get over this? And if you put yourself in the same world as the people you want to emulate, then by osmosis, if nothing else. So they found out that if you look at your four closest friends, two people make more money than you, two people make less money than you. But most people are more comfortable with the people making less money. So that's where they spend the majority of their time. When I heard that, I went out and I found four friends that were all multimillionaires. And guess what happened to my income?
Exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to keep up with them, but guess what? I had to work smarter. I had to figure out how to play in the same arena that they played in.
Exactly.
So if my theory is that you can ask someone to mentor you, and if they say no, it's a huge world out there. Just go to the next person. If they say no, they're not going to be the kind of person you'd want as a mentor anyway.
Right. And, you know, I totally agree with you. It's so uplifting when people are pulling you up rather than driving you down. And if you have people just not supporting your growth, then you need to move on. As cold as that may sound, that is a reality in the small business world place. And I want to also encourage our listeners to read Sharon's book, Mixing It Up, because I read that, and it is outstanding. It will provide
you
with a number of tips on how to just get out there and meet these people. All the different strategies of going out and linking up with these people who are going to help you, your business grow, help your financial situation change. And Sharon, I mean, your story amazes me. You were going to like a gazillion networking meetings. It didn't even sound like, where did you find time to even eat or sleep? Because
on the run. In the car.
Can you comment on what was going on in your life at that time? And I understand that you were overcoming some shyness and you were going to these networking meetings, I mean, like three or four a day. It was like crazy how many it was. But please share with our listeners what was going on in your life at the time and your strategy behind that.
Well, to understand that I probably had more to overcome than most 10 people. Not only shy, I grew up stuttering, couldn't walk into a room by myself if there were more than two people in the room. Extreme introvert, had a really tough time. I had met someone, I thought when you start a business you joined a chamber. I thought that was a given. I didn't know it was optional. And I went to the chamber and I was intimidated. I mean, everybody there seemed to know a lot more than I did, but they weren't really great about sharing what they did to get that information. So I had this man, he kept saying to me, he was in direct mail advertising, and so he would sell ads to retail locations and then package it into a direct mail piece. And he says, I want you to come to this group that I'm in, and I think it would really help you. And I said, sure, I'll be there. Well, for 5 months, I would drive by, and I'd look down, and I'd go, oh, they're not the right shoes, or, yeah, I don't like what I'm wearing today, or come up with all these different excuses why I couldn't go in. And then one day, after 5 or 6 months, all of a sudden it was like there was no traffic. I got there early. There was no excuses left. And I walked in, and at the very first meeting, I walked away with 3 leads. 2 became my biggest travel clients. 1 actually ended up about, I'm going to say, $35,000 a month in travel, which is huge. My need to take care of my employees was greater than my discomfort of being around people I didn't know. So with 5 employees, I said, all right, if this is the way I'm going to get business, then this is what I'll do. So I'd find a training and development meeting that met once a month, and then I'd find a Rotary Club that was every week. I would go to Bookkeepers Associating meeting, which was once a month, a chamber function where they just had a luncheon once a month. And literally, in the Bay Area, there's 45,000 events that happen every single month. So I could reach out, and within a 15-mile radius, literally, morning, noon, and night, and sometimes 4 times a day, 6 days a week, be in front of an organization and just say, you know what, if you're going to travel, you know someone that travels, I need the help. I would ask. I would say, you know, I've got 5 employees. The Gulf War has been really brutal to us in the travel industry. I need your help because I want to keep these employees taken care of. And I took the agency from $35,000 in January of 91 when the Gulf War broke out up to $185,000 a month in sales. But it was because people would meet me, and my, I guess I was so just the genuine nature of saying, I need your help. Mm-hmm. And I found that when you ask from this genuine place, that people will more than likely help you if they can.
I think that's great advice, and, you know, I've used that too, is because people in general are very giving and generous, and they just need some direction to how they can help you. And when you come out and say, I need your help with this, it's amazing who shows up and helps you out, isn't it?
It really is. And I think one of the things, and, you know, even going back to the mentor, if you don't ask people for help, you're doing them a disservice.
Absolutely.
Because people need to give back.
That's
and they can
true.
Say no, but if you don't ask, they don't even get a chance to say yes.
Well, you know, now I'm starting to think about when someone starts a business and they're working in it and they've created the support system and everything looks like they're going, it's going pretty well. What resources would you recommend for them to go to make sure that their business is actually on track?
Well, it's kind of funny. Tracking systems are mandatory, but very few people actually use them. It doesn't matter how crude it is. I don't care if they're using Outlook for a database management or Excel spreadsheet, but they have to do something. And most people will use a database, if they use one, as a contact manager, and that's not what it's really designed for. I used to design databases, so, you know, I get into this. My database has morphed from Q&A, which was Axe Big Brother, to FileMaker Pro, to Access, and now I'm using SQL. Whatever it is that you need to find somebody who can help you figure out the best way of using a database. So personally, I will extract at least 15 reports out of my database every month. Now, some people think, I don't need all that information, but everybody does. Where do people come from that you're talking to? What's the next step? What is it that you need to do to make sure that you don't lose track of these people? Because I promise, 6 months into a business, you don't remember what you were doing 6 months previously. So the database allows you to put the information in there and then walk away and concentrate on the things that are more important at this moment. But know you can always go back there and pull the information up when you need it. I have my accounting system in my database. There's actually, it's kind of funny, 158 fields for every record in my database.
Jeez.
And it's not like I use all 158 fields for every person, but I use the majority for the people who are active in my Elite Leads organization. And that's the one thing people will tell me every month, that I'm the most organized, most persistent, greatest follow-up they have ever seen.
So you probably,
I couldn't do that.
You probably have more information on Ray and me than we do on our own files, right?
I even know what you wore the first time I met you.
Good grief.
No, I don't go to that length. But, I mean, you know, people need to know that if they turn over the thought process to a computer system, then they don't have to think about it. And while we're at it, I'll tell you, I got hit really bad. Everybody should have a backup computer system, and I'm sure you do. But I had my backup system, which I took in, and I said, what I want you to do is upgrade the video monitor. While that happened, I had a virus that was downloaded with Adaware, and it wiped out my hard drive. Well, while the store had my other computer, they decided they were going to upgrade it to XP Pro and wiped out the hard drive, which was my backup.
Oh,
wow. So, lesson learned. I have two computers that have identical hard drives. You put all your working files on a D drive, not on your C drive, because if there's going to be a virus, it comes into C, it won't touch your working files. You can reload your software, but typically you cannot find your working files if your hard drive corrupts. Then I have a removable 160 gig hard drive. I keep my entire database on my website, and really important files are put on my website. So a lot of redundancy.
Hey, Ray, can you relate to any of what Sharon was talking about?
Absolutely. And I'm chomping at the bit here to jump in because I want to give advice to people right now. Instead of backing up your systems, back up your backups to your backups. Because if this hasn't happened to you folks, it will one day.
Yeah. Because not a matter of when, it's a matter of when.
Murphy will come and wipe your life out. So absolutely.
It's heartbreaking.
This is good advice. And while we're on this topic, Sharon, you mentioned how a database can be used for accounting systems. We know you can use it to manage your clients and so on. A number of other areas. But I love this topic because now you're talking about a form of automating your business and systemizing your business. Now, this is, I believe this is absolutely key when you're going into business in the beginning and you don't have all the different staff and you have to look at creating some system so that you don't have to wear all the hats. Because, as you mentioned, if you're spending the majority of your time in marketing, that's a good use of your time. If you're plunking on keyboards, entering in names into a database, that's not probably a good use of your time. So can you discuss what systems that you would recommend or that may be more helpful that our listeners can implement in the beginning to help just automate some of their business tasks?
This was really a challenge for me. Now, I have ADD, and meeting me, you probably weren't aware of that. So I have to work really hard to have that not obvious. So when I sit down at my desk, if I've got papers all over it, it confuses me. So I have to start with a clean desk, which I think is a good rule of thumb for anyone. At the end of the day, everything should have a file folder. Everything should be in its place. So when you start the next day, you start with a clean slate, maybe file folders in order of where you need to spend your priorities. When I decided that it was time to hire an employee, I documented every detail of my business. And I have two separate operations manager's manuals. So one of them is that I can have an employee come in and do all the mundane tasks, send my emails, because I send email notices for my meetings. I can have them, you know, clean out certain things on the email Outlook files. Lots of things that I just don't want to do. So in this manual, I could have somebody that knows how to just turn on a computer, open up the book, and follow the exact system that I've designed, and they don't have to ask me a question, then everything about my business, and my business, you wouldn't believe it, but it's really labor-intensive and organizational development challenging. So I have a manual that's 15 chapters or 14 chapters, and it's every single detail of the thought process, how you start the business, exactly what you do, conversations, what's necessary to make meetings run very efficiently, productively, and fun. Every single little detail, so that if I wanted, I could package that manual and give it to someone, and they could start their very own leads group without even thinking twice about it. So the benefit in doing that, I can go back at any time and not have to worry about, how did I do that thing that I only do once a year?
Right. That's great. And now, if I get this manual in the mail with a letter that you're going on a cruise for a month, so I would be able to just step right into the manual and continue running your business?
Every detail.
That's great.
I have a time management sheet that I put in Excel that has every task that I have to do every month with a specific day and time that I prefer to do it. So I'm not answering my email in prime time call time.
Sure.
I'm not picking up my mail until Friday afternoon, and I never get my mail at home. I send it to one of those postal annex mailboxes place so that I can pick it up on Friday, stand there, throw away the junk mail, and come home with 25% of all the paper that normally would have come in the house.
And I was just kidding about you mailing that package.
Oh, I could. It's true. I could. I actually, as a test, because I'm really big on testing things, this is hard to imagine, but I was an efficiency expert for the State of California University Systems, which is rather an oxymoron. But I would create systems. And so what I did is I brought in this young lady. She was 23 years old and never been on a computer, hard to imagine, but she had never touched a computer. I gave her the manual, and she was able to go through every single task that it takes me to run my business. Never asked me a question.
That is incredible. Sharon, I know that one of the big key searches on the internet right now is home-based business. If you type that in, there's thousands of links that comes up. And I know a lot of our listeners are thinking about or are currently doing business from the home. What tips do you have for those individuals in doing their home-based business?
Well, I think one of the main things is carve out a place in the house that you won't get interrupted. You know, don't use the kitchen table where everything has to be taken away every day to have a meal. Make sure that your family knows it's business. They don't come running in to ask you questions about who fed the dog. You know, take it serious. I mean, this is the whole idea of making sure that you're going to have a support system. A lot of people, this is so funny, I think five people know where I live, because before I moved to this side of the town, people would just pop in any time of the day because they knew I worked at home and thought that they could at any time when they were in the neighborhood. Or one guy stopped by because he was having his car fixed and didn't have anything to do for 3 hours. And I looked and I go, here's the remote. Amuse yourself. I'm working. You know, it's really important that you treat this as a business. And I know a lot of people who work at home and, you know, they're in their pajamas or they don't get dressed until 4 in the afternoon. If you can work effectively like that, fine, but most people can't. You know, I'm pretty good about, you know, putting up my hair and coming in clothes that I feel pretty professional. So if somebody happened to stumble in, I would be presentable. And that gives me a presentable attitude. So I think a lot of it is that, you know, we psych ourselves up when we're going to the office and we have to have this professional attitude. And I think we need to make sure that we keep that at home as well.
Those are great tips.
Yeah, I think I fail in that area because I've had to answer the door a few times in my flannels. So
I just saw a news special last night where the kids are wearing their flannels to school. So you're in trend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
you're in style.
Oh, great. Good to hear. Yeah, this next question, Sharon, I want you to save our listeners literally thousands of dollars, because this is a particular painful area to me. When I first started in business, I thought probably a good place to start would be go find a really good book on marketing. So I did. I purchased a general marketing book, and I even went out and took some general marketing courses. Now, what they were telling me is go out and do some advertising and do PR and the usual thing. Well, after tens of thousands of dollars of wasted money, I actually found that each industry has its own sort of marketing strategies that work, and many of them are very cost-effective. And it goes back to, again, find a mentor that can really tell you that there's certain things you should be doing and there's certain things you shouldn't be doing, and just don't waste your money on a lot of things. So the question I have for you, for somebody just getting into business, when knowing there are numerous ways of marketing a business, what method do you find that works best for entrepreneurs?
Well, it's something that really has stymied a lot of people, and over the 15 years I've been working with entrepreneurs, I have found that there's no one rule of thumb that works perfectly, but this is the best guide. Again, you need to track everything that you do, which go back to the database. If you don't have a tracking system to know where clients are coming from, you're wasting your money. I have a client that when he started his business, he came in and proudly announced that he was spending $1,000 a month on Yellow Page ads.
Yikes.
And I had to bite my tongue because I wanted to say, that's the stupidest thing you could have done. So after 1 year, I said, so how many clients did you get out of that Yellow Page ads that you put in there? He said, oh, none.
Right.
You know, and unless you're a CPA or something that typically would actually require someone to go call a stranger for business, don't bother with the Yellow Page. You can have a business listing. It doesn't cost you a dime. It's a two-line business listing. The newspaper advertising, they say that it takes 17 times for someone to see the same ad before they take action. That's a lot of money to put into newspaper ads, not even knowing if it's the right ad that will really appeal to people. And one of the people in Elite Leads early on, he put an ad in there, and I think about the 14th time it was in the paper, he realized that it was just above the obituary section, and he was a career consultant. Because you have no say in where this ad is going. Direct mail. Boy, that's a tough one because it's really expensive. There was a mortuary over in Emeryville, and they wanted to do a direct mail piece because they just weren't getting any new clients. And it's not to say that people weren't passing away over there. It's just nobody realized they were there. And I said, you know what I'd like to do is have you create a box lunch with chamber music 1 week and jazz the next month and, you know, get people to come out there and know that it's a fun place. And he said, no, we talked it out. We're going to do a direct mail piece. So $20,000 later in 6 months, and I said, so how many clients did you get out of that direct mail piece? He said, not even a phone call. So direct mail, if you're lucky, you get a 1% response, but that's pretty tough. Postcards, usually a 5%, so it's about five times greater response because people still think of postcards like, you know, Aunt Sally goes to Hawaii and sends you a postcard, so they'll save it. And it's about one-fifth the expense of doing direct mail advertising. But the very best is email marketing. And what I have found is that if you think about email marketing, it's probably the best thing that's been invented for entrepreneurs since the fax. If you look at creating an email campaign, so you go out and you meet people and you put their email address in a database and you send them an email, it was great to meet you, I'd like to add you to my list for my electronic newsletter, e-zine, electronic magazine. And most people say, sure, why not? And then what you have to make sure is that you have content available that's helpful for them. You don't want a, you know, 12-screen-long e-zine that people have to read in 10-point type. You want very succinct, you know, like your marketing tips on the Internet. Perfect. 2 or 3 lines, great. I have time to read it. Fun. And then what you do is start creating a database by using that. Now, if somebody sees your marketing tip for 12 weeks or 12 days in a row, all of a sudden it makes them stop and think and connect you with what you're doing in your business. So it's a very soft way of marketing the business. And I would say that probably the one thing that has stood out, or actually two things, but one of the things, and you've noticed this on my book, Power Partners, which are the strategic alliances, but looking at it as a partnership rather than somebody who can give me business, because it has to be reciprocal. So if you're going to start your own CPA practice, business bankers could refer you clients, business attorneys, people who do commercial leasing and put some business in a new location, somebody who's a sign maker, a printer who's printing up the new business cards, all of those people are your power partners. So if you got together with one of those people every week, at the end of a year, you'd have 50 people referring you business. And then what I like to get people to do is every month maybe have lunch with five or six of those power partners so that they all get to know each other. It's all about building relationships. But the number one way of getting business, of marketing your business, is through public speaking. And it's not like you can go out to an organization and do an infomercial, but if you create top 10 tips or best 7 techniques, you can get to any organization where your clients are actually hanging out and no one else is competing with you in that organization.
You know, Sharon, I've been in business for almost 8 years, and Ray has been in business for about 15. And I know that if we had the opportunity to go back in time, we would change so many things. You know, you've been working with entrepreneurs for over 14 years. If there was one thing that you would do differently, what would that be?
I'd outsource more, and I would have started outsourcing things earlier. Especially the things I don't like to do, like my own bookkeeping. You know, I can't believe that I was so afraid to let go of some of the tasks. I have 3 people making calls for me right now, and they just feed me people who are interested so I don't have to do the original dial. I would say that brings me 10 times the investment. So, you know, look at what you can get off of your plate and spend more time generating revenue so that you can pay other people who would need the work. Spread it around.
Sure. Sharon, I just want to comment on that, because we give this advice a lot, too. And here's common response, and I want you to comment on this. The common response is, but I just don't have the money to outsource. I'm trying to grow my business.
So I asked people, I said, do you have an extra $100 a month to go out to dinner twice a month? Sure. So I want you to stay home this month. I want you to take that $100 and hire someone for 10 hours at $10 an hour. And next month, you're going to see no less than $1,000 income for that 10 hours.
Right.
I said, can you afford it then?
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't see how much working on tasks that are not high-paying tasks, how much that's actually hurting their business. That is great advice, Sharon.
You can tell I don't think normal.
And we're winding down on this interview, and I'm going to ask you one last question. What is one tidbit of sound advice that you want to offer to our listeners?
I would say ask for help early on and often. The more you ask, the more advice you'll get, and you might try one of 3 things that people suggest, but you never know what other people's experiences will actually lead you to a perfect solution for something that has just a major challenge for you. So always keep a detached attitude and be open-minded about what people are telling you, their experience. But don't ever think that just because someone has more experience than you that they have the right answer. You know, look for people who you know that are successful before you ask.
Excellent advice. Thank you, Maria, and thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Ray and Maria.
That was Sharon Abbott of Elite Leads Business Development. You can learn more about Sharon's products and services by going to www.interviewanexpert.com. Simply scroll down the alphabetical list of experts to locate Sharon's photo and click on our link to go inside to access a very special offer. We are the Entrepreneur Doctors, and we thank you for joining us again for another edition of Interview an Expert.